Sippers, welcome to this episode of the Tea With Me podcast with me, wee Shane Todd. It is a guest episode this week. I guess that we have been trying to make this happen in the studio because she was here doing a load of shows and has a really busy schedule at the minute. It just didn't work out, so we've done it over Zoom. And me and Dan were like all nervous about Zoom because we used to do a podcast on Zoom. And sometimes you can talk over each other. There's a delay. The technology worked out very well. Very well. I think you'll enjoy this episode. I'll tell you about my guest in a second. But first of all, let me plug our Patreon, which is patreon.com/teawithmepodcast. We do a bonus episode on a Monday. Just a wee, you know, if this episode is a big mug of tea, this is a little fine china cup. Little bite-sized episode. It kind of goes behind the podcast a little bit. I talk about some gigs I've been doing. And we just have a chat amongst ourselves. Patreon.com/TeaWithMePodcast. We do the live stream on a Friday. And as Dan pointed out earlier, you can go back. So when you join up to the Patreon, you have the archive. You can go back to a couple of years worth of extra content. All your favorite comics and guests coming on, doing the live stream, Kieran Bartlett, William Thompson, Paddy, Dave, Mickey, all of them. Some great guests and stuff to listen back on. Patreon.com/TeaWithMePodcast. We are sponsored by Thompson's Tea, Punjana, the big cats in the tea, the lions roaming the local tea jungle. Because you've got Nambari, if that's even still going. I don't know. Who knows? Haven't heard from them for a while. But they are, you know, those, what do you call those hairless cats? They're them, like Dr. Evil used to have. You know, you've got Tetley, which are big fat cats. You know, not fat cats because they're not selling that much tea, but they're not that nice of a cat. You know, they hang about for too long and that sort of, like the cats you see on holiday. And what we've got is Thompson's, who make Punjana, which is the lion of the local tea game. These guys have been killing it since the late 1800s. Should they not have stopped by now? Have they not completed it? No. In the words of DJ Khaled, another one. Another bag off the production line. These guys, I could get emotional when I tell you what they have done for the local tea game. And not just local, they sell in other places as well. You might think Punjana comes from a faraway exotic place. It's made right here in Belfast. It's our thing. Okay, it crosses the lines, it crosses the divide, it brings people together. Northern Ireland's number one selling tea. Keep drinking it. That's what the message is. Put some respect on the Punjana name. We're also sponsored by Manscaped. Now, if you're a regular listener, you'll know what Manscaped is. Or if you're not a regular listener, but you have a bit of respect for yourself, you'll know what Manscaped is. Men's below-the-belt grooming products. I know someone who used it above the belt recently. I know a comic that I won't name, and I said, that's a fresh shave there. You're looking relatively fresh-faced. And he said, I use my Manscaped. Now, that is an option, but part of me is like, it better have been a fresh one. Because if not, that's stinking. Can't tell you who he is from Newry. These guys at Manscaped have it all. They have the Lawnmower 4.0 with wireless charging technology because wires are for losers. This has an LED light on it. You basically, let me break it down for you. It's for shaving your pubic area. And you can use this on all bits around there, not just the main pubes, but like down the sides, if that's an issue for you. Under the bag, wherever you want to go. You could go, Dan, can you use this on your bum? Have you? Yeah, no, you haven't? Well, you need to because you should think about it. You know? I don't know what your situation is there. Let me. Yeah, you need, if put that away, you need to. Manscaped is just, it's bringing men into the 21st century. Take care of yourselves down there. Be smooth. Manscaped.com. Use the code TWITHME for 20% off and free shipping. People are going to be going summer holidays again. Aaron Butler's just away to Tenerife. And he said, Todd, Father, I want to go to Sion Park. I want to go to the water park. Have you any tips for me? And I said, get yourself on manscaped.com, use the code T with me for 20% off and free shipping. Shave yourself up down there, and you're going to you're going to hit serious speeds down that slide. Because he'd gone before and he said it was taking him ages because of his, in his own words, his thick mind to get down the slides. It was weighing him down. And now he just sent me a video and I couldn't even see it. He said, what do you think of me going down the slide? I said, man, I didn't even know that was you. I couldn't even see you. You're so fast because he's so smooth down there. Manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping. The last thing I'm going to plug is my tour, shine.net. Most shows are either sold out or they're about to sell out. I'm not adding any more regional tour shows. That's what it is at the minute. I can't commit to any more. This is it. The Opera House run has a couple more shows. A few matinees added in there if you want to go to an afternoon show and then free your evening up to go and have pints or use your Manscaped product or drink Punjana, whatever you want to do, you can do it. So shine.net, you'll see it in my bio and most of my social media stuff. My guest today, delighted to have her, Joanne McNally. Joanne McNally is a stand-up from Dublin, but not just doing big things in Dublin, doing big things all over the place, including Belfast. She just did a run of shows at the Limelight, loads of shows on her Prosecco Express tour. I know people that were at the shows, and I'm not just saying this, said she was unbelievable. Such a big fan base from her podcast, from Vogue Williams, her own stand-up and things she's doing by herself. She's very, very funny, very just naturally funny. We've never met. You meet most people on the Irish comedy circuit, but Joanne started in 2017, and then obviously lockdown for a couple of years, so we've never gigged together, but I would definitely like to. She's hilarious, and I enjoyed this episode because there's a lot I didn't know about her, and her story about how she got into stand-up is not the usual story of how people get into stand-up. And that's why I love doing this podcast, because we chat about all different things. We have a lot of stand-ups on, but we talk about different paths that people have taken, like Paddy McDonald, who got into stand-up because he was a bouncer and had his finger bitten off doing the door, and to help his mental health, he started doing stand-up. So you find that people's reasons for doing stand-up aren't just, I think I'm funny, you know? Joanne's, as well as being funny, just extremely interesting, really nice person to talk to. I think you'll love this episode. Go check out her show in the SSA Arena in Belfast. We've got the link in the bio. Dan, anything else, or are we just getting straight into this episode? Like Aaron Butler at the water park, we're smooth, we're shaved, we're going down the free fall. Joanne, I always ask people, like, because this podcast is called Tea With Me, so I always ask people, do you drink tea? If so, what's the level of your tea drinking? But I want to switch it up today, and I want, can I guess if you're a sure tea drinker or not? I imagine you will drink tea during the week. I don't have you down as a weekend tea drinker, but I can see you especially coming in Tuesday, Wednesday. I can see you hitting maybe two teas a day. Have I got this totally wrong?
Totally wrong. It's so weird. I fell out of love with tea completely. I think
no,
it just doesn't have the kick that I need.
Right, right.
Emotionally. So
what have you moved to? And when did this happen?
Tea's not toxic enough for me. Yeah. It's too wholesome. So I would, my three thing that I hydrate with, it would be coffee, water, wine. That would be it, really.
Coffee, water, wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, tea, it definitely, like, especially when you're performing, when you're doing this kind of thing, it doesn't lend itself to the lifestyle, really. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, there is a familiarity there. There's a nostalgia there with a cup of tea. I think you need to reconnect.
I do find it quite comforting. I'd have tea. I'd say I have one cup of tea a month. If I was having one of my favorite meals to make, because I don't cook at all, right, and is scrambled eggs and toast.
Yeah.
Or boiled eggs and toast, poached eggs and toast, anything like that. And with that, I would have a cup of tea with that. But I usually find I don't drink for fun. I drink for function. So if it's like coffee, because I want to feel awake.
Yeah.
Wine, because I don't want to feel anything. Water, because I know I'm supposed to drink that. Whereas tea is a bit of a luxury, really. It's a bit of a nothing drink in my eyes.
Well, I mean, especially coming from Ireland, that's a very controversial, potentially cancelable opinion to have to describe. To describe tea as a nothing sort of drink is that causes offense across the board.
I might have to send this to my publicist, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Ireland's the only place that could be the end of things.
I'll be up there with Jimmy Carr. Jimmy, apologising profusely for my dark material.
I asked you just before we recorded where you were, and if you hadn't have said the place in Ireland you were, I would have said like 1700s France.
Do you know what happened? Sorry,
are you in Versailles?
That is so weird that you'd ask me that, Shane, because I don't know whether it's that I have a real horn for Versailles. And I was actually only watching a documentary about it last night. But then you brought it up. I was only coming up from breakfast this morning. Touring so hard, isn't it? Back to my bridal suite in the Killeshea Hotel. And I was like, you know the way you're always planning trips for yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I am anyway, and I travel a lot on my own. So at this stage, holidays on my own, I don't even include anyone else anymore. I'm just not bothered waiting for their schedule. So I just go. And I was like, Versailles, that's the next place I'm going to go now.
Now, here's the only thing I know about Versailles is the Treaty of Versailles, and I don't even know what that is, but I just know it is like an old French place, and that, you, for anyone who's not seen this, that's a four-poster bed. The only thing that sort of wrecks the look of the room is over your shoulder. I can see the hotel room door with the map, the fire exit map on the back. I would take that. I would unscrew that if I'm staying there. But I like what you're saying about the holidays, like on a trip by yourself, because I'm really into that. And the terrible thing is I have a wife and son, but I love self holidays. Like, that's the best.
Yeah, I think as well, because I don't know how I would fare now on a sun holiday on my own. But when I first started in stand-up, I don't know, maybe you're different, but I found it very lonely when I first started, because I never really intended to get into stand-up. It was all a bit of an accident. And I wasn't very mentally robust at the time. And I just found it very difficult on my own. And I found it very, very, the road very lonely. But I'm so used to it now that I don't know any other way to be anymore. So now I'm probably a bit, I'm probably kind of tougher company now, because I just do my own thing now. I don't have the patience to be waiting around to see. Even like, I'll meet you downstairs at I don't want to wait for anyone in rooms. If you're not ready to get the train, I'll get the train. I'll meet you there.
I'm with you on this.
I've turned into a bit of a dickhead, really, I'd say. But so that's why when I try and plan holidays, I mean, trying to get someone to come to the Palace of Versailles with me, I mean, Shane, you'd maybe go, but. Yeah, there's no one's going
to
go.
I think I would go out of your curiosity to see what gives you the, in your words, the horn for Versailles. Like, what is it about Versailles where you're like, what? Like,
I like history. Okay. And I think because the, you know, everything that's going on at the moment, or everything that's going on in general, just the world, that the like kind of relentless pinging of our current world, that there's something kind of soothing about going back into looking at history. Like, it was simpler, but also kind of gruesome, which is also kind of fascinating. Like, I was reading the other day about the worst deaths that have ever happened. Okay. Do you know these Darwin Awards? Have you ever heard about these?
No.
So the Darwin Awards are given out every year for the stupidest deaths. The premise being that, like, you're basically doing us all a favor by removing yourself from the gene pool.
Right.
Survival of the fittest and all that. Anyway, I went down this hell of looking at these all ridiculous deaths. And then I got into like the worst deaths in the world. Because I remember reading about this guy who fell through one of those, what are they called? You know, in New York where the steam comes up.
A manhole cover?
A manhole. And
Can we just call that a person cover now? Is that okay? Can we please?
Please.
Enough.
Please.
Enough.
I need to feel seen. I need to feel included.
So guy fell down a person cover, which is always my biggest fear.
He fell down a person socket in the street and boiled to death under the ground from the steam, which I thought was the worst death. But then I found out and read this death about this death yesterday. It was back in ancient Greece. They used to torture people. That was kind of their vibe.
They love it.
Loved it. And he built this huge, big steel bowl with a hollow inside. And then he would put people, like if you were if you committed a crime or something like that, they would put you in it and light a fire under the steel bull's belly, and you would boil or burn to death. But he put this sound system in the front of the bull's mouth, so when you screamed, it would sound like a bull making a really kind of soothing noise.
Yeah, I see. To be like that, like did you watch Game of Thrones?
How did we get there? You were asking about the Palace of Versailles.
I don't know, but you were like, I don't know if I'd be a good company on tour. And certainly people are like, are you coming down for breakfast? And you're like, I'm just reading about the worst deaths of all time. I understand that. But I like the idea in your head of, like, I like history too. And I like that you, yeah. you know, you associate Versailles with being this historic place. But the problem is, if you go there now, it's not going to be like history. There's going to be like a Nando's.
But no, Shane.
Do they keep it old?
Yeah, it's the Palace of Versailles.
Oh, that's I don't like mean...
Putting, that's yeah. like they're putting Nando's in the Vatican. Like, yeah. they're not going to do that. Yeah. It's very well, it's completely well protected. But it's all, like, it's all the Louis, you know, Louis XIV, Louis XVI. Like, the French Revolution, it was the Palace of Versailles. Like, they stormed the palace and took everyone out, and Marie Antoinette. And do you remember year one? They were all thrown under the guillotine. But I think there's something fascinating about... History's always fascinating, obviously, of course, because it's kind of hard for us to believe that it ever really happened.
Yeah.
And so when something's tangible and you can touch it,
yeah,
then it's like it's a next level experience of history. And that's why going to the Palace of Versailles for me would be quite special.
I like it. I'm like, yeah, keep stuff old. But at the same time, I like convenience. I like Nando's. So, like, you said about the Vatican. I've been to the Vatican. Far and Nando's in for the boys. Like, why yeah. are we not? That's how you'll know that the Catholic Church has really got modern, is if they're like, yeah. listen, you come and pray. And also they're peri-peri chicken.
Yeah, like, there's a Starbucks there.
Have you been to the Vatican? Actually, I thought it was weird.
No, I haven't been to the Vatican. Where was it? Oh, I was in Trim the other day in Meath, and I was like, it's fascinating. Like, Trim is gorgeous. The nice thing about being on tours, I'm visiting these places I would never usually visit.
Right.
I feel like Fáilte, Ireland at the moment, but Trim is gorgeous. It's all these old castles, like loads of remains of castles. And then in the middle of them in the town, there's like this huge big vape shop selling electric fags. Do you know what I mean? People smoking, people looking at castles, smoking yeah. computers, basically.
It's been there since 1765.
yeah.
But
it was funny.
I you mentioned like Trim and Meath. I'm one of these terrible people that claim to, like, you know, I love Ireland, I love the island of Ireland, and I think I know a lot about it, and I've been to all these places. I've been to like 1% of places. I always get drawn back to, I'm like, let's go somewhere different down south, and I always go to the same place. I always go to Dingle to see the dolphin.
But what are you going to do next? The dolphin's left it.
Yeah, but they say they've got a new one in. Because they tried, really? Yeah, they tried it. The dolphin was called Fungi, and everyone's like, oh, I haven't seen Fungi in a couple of days, and then people down in Dingle were like, oh, he's back. He's just a lot different looking, you know? So everyone knew what they were at.
Yeah. You know, are you sure, Shane? Because I'm pretty sure I would have heard of Fungi come back, because that was huge news.
I think there was a few guys just trying to peddle that he might have been back, but then, like, they were found out pretty quick, you know? But I don't know. He's still out there somewhere.
But poor Dingle, like, the amount of business that dolphin was bringing in.
Yeah.
It'd be like if Bono died. We'd be wheeling out a new Bono saying nothing about it.
Yeah.
We'd be like, don't ask questions. Yeah. That's him.
Yeah. So, like, I...
Same dude.
There's definitely more places I'd like to go. But I've been Dingle's to so few of the counties.
Dingle's quite the trip for you. Where are you up north?
Hollywood.
Is that near Belfast?
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, it's basically Belfast, but we would get offended if you said Belfast, but it's Belfast 3 miles away.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. No, Dingle's stunning.
You have just done a load of shows up here, and the run you went on in Dublin. So I've known of you for years, just because you do stand up in Ireland. It's a relatively small scene, even though the Belfast scene and the Dublin scene are kind of very different. But I just kept seeing these tour dates, you know, because you sort of see gig listings and that sort of thing. And I was just seeing you, like, more shows in Vicar Street, more shows in Belfast. And the very impressive thing about that is Belfast is actually a very tough place to sell tickets in and break into. I think if you're not on the Belfast comedy scene,
yeah,
or the likes of a Peter Kay, or, like, you know, like that level. So the fact that you've done so many shows, it's such a, like, doth of the cap, because Belfast is a tough comedy scene. Even nowadays. Yeah, there's a good comedy scene here, but you would get, like, a comedian from America who's coming over to do an Irish tour, and you find that they'll do well in Dublin, maybe in Galway, maybe the likes of a Cork, but Belfast, they can't connect with. But you seem to have got that connection with a Belfast audience, like, very, very quickly.
What I think, because I do know what you're saying. I think a couple of things. It's a female connection rather than a national connection. Does that make sense? Rather than, what am I trying to say? It's a female connection rather than a kind of a Irish, Northern Irish, English, fucking Welsh thing.
Geography thing. Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. I think it is. And also, and I'm not blowing smoke up their hell, but the women up in the north of Ireland, they're fucking great crack. Like, I was doing a show. I think it was a part of a kind of Northern Irish comedy festival.
Right.
And I was doing my own show there earlier on this year, I think. It's all kind of gotten blurred now. And it was in a tent, like a marquee.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
In a square in Belfast on a Monday night.
Perfect.
And I was like, I mean, could you have any worse setup for a comedy show? At like 7 o'clock, do you know what I mean? And I was, do you know the way sometimes you're like, this is just going to be a really tough gig. Yeah. I just need to get through it.
Yeah.
It's a good run for the show, but it's going to be really hard. It's one of my favorite shows I've had on the tour.
Great.
They were so sound, so up for it. You could say anything. Like, they didn't care. Like, they were like, ooh, yay. It was so much fun. And I was like, fuck that. Like, they just get it.
Yeah.
And then when we started booking the Limelights, obviously it became obvious that there was a bigger market there. And then we put on the SSE Arena.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, you know, especially like all the Vicar Street shows, which is probably, Vicar Street's probably our equivalent of the Ulster Hall here. You've done and are doing that many Vicar Street shows. You probably could have done like a stadium. Like, realistically, you could have done a stadium. No, you could have done like a football ground or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. You probably could, numbers wise. I think there's a couple of things at play there. One, I think, so I'm doing 50 Vicar Streets, right? But I think at a certain stage, 50s. But there's, because they started selling, obviously, off the back of the podcast primarily. Firstly, there's no, Vicar Street's got a great atmosphere. Secondly, we didn't know it was going to get to that many. And also, right, I think people buying tickets for, say, the last 10 we put on, I think a lot of them are buying tickets just out of curiosity because they're like, who the fuck is this woman? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if she's selling this many tickets, we'll go. And I think if you were to put on a huge, big room off the bat, you wouldn't get that.
Yes, I'm with you.
Curiosity off the bat. Like, and that's because I used to work in PR, so I have a bit of a PR brain on me. But I think that might have something to do with it. Like, there's definitely people at this are coming to those shows going, I'm just coming because other people are going.
Yeah,
I just want to see what's going on.
But like, 50 Vicar Streets is, that's wild. A run of shows is great. Like, I prefer that. Like, I like doing the big shows, but I like doing a run of slightly more intimate shows, although Vicar Street's hardly intimate, but I just like that idea of night after night, like, perfecting the show, changing little bits maybe here and there.
Totally. And you know yourself, the more you do a show, the better it gets. Now, it does hit a point, and I have to be careful because I feel like I'm maybe, although last night I had 3 days off and I really needed those days off. I just needed a bit of distance from the show because I felt like I was kind of losing interest in it a bit because you're just banging them out because it's night after night after night. So I think there is a balance of doing a show loads of times and perfecting it. And tonight, even, you know, sometimes I'll be like, tonight I'm going to do everything I did last night the same, except that one joke. I'm going to add something onto that. So your whole hour could just be about seeing if you can add on in one place and make it
better. 1,000%.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah. But then, as I say, do you get to a stage where you're like, oh, fucking hell, I can't believe I have to say this line again. I'm going to throw myself out a window.
Yeah, like,
that's,
you have to,
you
keep
need the
finding
days
it,
off.
You have to keep finding it funny.
It's so interesting. And I'm sure you find this as well. Like, there's jokes that I was doing at the start of the tour that I really liked and worked well that just don't work anymore. So I've taken them out. And that's not on them. That's on me because I'm obviously not delivering them in the same way because I've lost interest in them. So they're gone.
I noticed that if I tell a story, you know, when you have a bit and it's not linked to other bits, it's just a story of something that happened and you're sort of retelling it. The first time you tell it is by far and away the best. And you haven't had 100%. A chance to, you haven't perfected it. You haven't put punchlines in it. I had a story about my dad being in an aeroplane, like a two-person aeroplane, and I told it the night he told me it. I just retold the story. And when I told it, I was like, that's going to be like a set piece of a new hour. Like, I'm going to build an hour around that. Tried to tell it about a week later. It wasn't funny because I didn't have the... I didn't have the enthusiasm for it that I had the day of. How long have you been doing stand-up for?
So I think I did my first ever like gig in 2017, I think, because I have started to find, because I'm very bad with time, numbers, information.
Yeah.
All that stuff. But I'm getting asked that a lot now. So I actually went and checked it. I think it's 2017.
Do you think
I did my first gig?
Are you getting that thing of... I get with doing a lot of stuff online, and especially since we've done the podcast and it started to go well, there becomes a thing where people, and there's no problem, like I definitely have no problem with it, but when people almost think it's like an overnight success kind of thing, people are like, wow, it's like, you know, people just think it's like happened overnight and they don't realize that, no, it's actually, there was so long of it not working, or putting on shows and not that many people coming out. Are you kind of having that thing now with especially the Vicar Street run where people think like you've literally just started because they're just hearing about you maybe for the first time?
I'm absolutely sure that is 100% that's happening. They're not really saying it to me, but that's always the way. It's like it's kind of like a bit of momentum, and it's like you hit a certain spot and it just kind of pops.
Yeah.
Like you're grafting away, staying in fucking dog shelters in the UK because you've no money, making a show of yourself. Shows work, some shows don't. And then suddenly something clicks and then you start doing better in the clubs and all that stuff. And then you like that it was the podcast for me, obviously. And then you've access to get into all these ears and then something pops.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of, it just like that then you're just.
Yeah, because people think that as, and it's totally natural, but the first time they hear of you, they're like, well, you must have just started because I've just heard about you. And I almost prefer that. I like that narrative as opposed to thinking back to when I was, you know, 18, you know, doing stand-up to know people.
It'd be great to be like, I started 2 months ago. I'm just the Rain Man of stand-up comedy. Yeah. That's me. That's how I roll. It's funny because people like kind of reducing the amount of time they've been in stand-up.
Because it's always
more impressive if you just kind of, you know what I mean? You're like
three
open spots and you're up doing 600 Vicar Streets. But no, I mean, you know yourself, there's so much work goes into it. And I'm not complaining. I actually really loved all that. Like I did like the graft part of it, which obviously still exists, but there's bigger rewards there now, you know? But I've nothing, I know that sounds kind of pathetic, but I'm quite dogged about certain things. It's not always good. Sometimes, like, I can get kind of focused on unhealthy habits.
Yeah.
Like when I started in stand-up, I was in treatment for an eating disorder. So this was something to do to, it was just almost something to do to try and get better, or like, I don't know.
Was that like advice that you had been given, was maybe go and try a new hobby, or was this totally on you? Like, was this something you thought this might help with that?
I'd say if I told my psychiatrist I was starting stand-up comedy in an effort to recover from an eating disorder, she would have literally put me in a fucking straitjacket. She's like, you need stability. You need to be in an asylum, not on a stage. No, I was in and out. I quit my job. I was in treatment as an outpatient. So I was just in kind of like a 9-to-5 treatment center. And then I was out kind of roaming around the world on the weekends and the evenings. And then a friend of mine, Una, she was moving into theater and she wanted to put on the show called Singlehood. And she just guessed, like, I loved performing as a kid. I really wanted to act, actually. And but my family wouldn't be that way inclined. They'd be quite sensible and acting. You know, that was like, that's your hobby. It's not your job.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but I did always like performing, and Una suggested I go into this show, Singlehood. At the time, so the Singlehood was kind of like mockumentary theatre, they call it, or documentary theatre, where it's half real people, half comics, i.e. they're not real humans. They're fucking clowns. Half real people, half clowns. And talking about their experience of like being single or being married or being in love or coming out or whatever it is. And she asked, would I like to be in it? And at the time, I had just been broken up with by this bald lad who I was you know, fuming about it. And I was telling this, I told her the story and she thought it was funny. And she's like, just tell that story. So
right.
I did. And then this other comic joined and he was like, that's stand-up.
Now, does him being bald come back into the story or is that just a chance to have a dick?
No, it was the...
like, what's the link with him being bald?
I've clearly moved on. I'm on a journey. I've made my peace. No, because the story was that I was just being belligerent about it because I was, you know, he was bald. I tend to sometimes with lads, if they show an interest in me, I'll just go along with it.
Right.
I'd be like, oh, you seem to know what you're doing. You seem to think this is a good idea.
Okay.
I don't really trust my own decision. Right. Yeah. So
all they need is just enthusiasm.
Determination. Like I am two drinks away from getting abducted, stalked, all that shit, and thinking I'm in a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
So I'm like, he's absolutely mad about me. He's like, he's changed it to the radiator in the fucking basement, Joanne. I'm like,
but it's the best radiator in the house. Yeah.
Absolutely mad about me. So that was kind of the deal with this lad. And then he broke up with me. Of course he did. I was riddled with bulimia at the time. God love him. I'd say he was like, what is going on with her? He didn't know though. So, and the joke was, he, you know, he's breaking up with me. And I'm like, this is the thing. I used to call him Pykel on stage. And because his name is Michael. And then I was like, do you think you've got, sorry, Pykel, can I interrupt you there? You know, you're bald, yeah, because this conversation sounds like you've got a full head of hair. So that was like the angle of this little story that I was telling.
Get you.
And yeah. And then the comic who suggested I go into stand up, in fairness to him, he was very, very supportive. And he brought me on tour with him. And I just started doing like 5 minutes a night and then I kind of went out on my own then.
That's, you know, to have other people recognize that something you're doing like that could work on stage, like that's funny. It's such a good confidence boost to start stand-up in because, and like anyone who does stand-up, like we all have doubt, definitely. But I think you spend so long waiting for like endorsement from your peers or like a bit of a, like you're really good at this. So to get that early doors, I think would be really good.
Oh, there's no way. Like, there's no way I would have done it. And without sounding really wanky, it did save me from where I was because I really had no reason to get better because all, to me, recovery just meant getting fat and going back and sitting in an office. And I didn't want to do either of that. That was my mindset.
Yeah.
So this gave me the freedom to, I think there was, you know, always a little show pony in me that needed to be fed in some way. And I mean, I basically swapped bulimia for comedy, which is it's a nice trade, but like I say, there was no way in hell I was ever gonna, I'm so lucky, I feel so lucky sometimes. It's like a sliding doors thing. I get freaked out that Una wouldn't have put me in the play and that the comic wouldn't have suggested he wouldn't have pushed me into comedy, and I honestly don't know where I'd be. I'd probably still be knocking around that ward.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did doing stand up, like, did that have an immediate effect on the bulimia? Like, did you straight away see like?
No, Jesus, no. It's such a long process coming out of something like that, but it gave me, like I say, a reason to get better, and also gave me a confidence in myself that wasn't based on my weight.
Get you.
So yeah. I could now work on trying to be a funny comic rather than a thin girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my priorities started to shift and I saw myself as more than just like a bag of bones that needs to just reduce itself down to like a skeleton. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, I have a fresh purpose now.
Yeah.
I have something else to obsess over, something else to focus on.
Yeah. Like,
so it was brilliant in that regard.
At the minimum, stand-up is the coolest hobby of all time. Like, at the minimum, it is such a cool, if you just dabble in stand-up the odd time, it is the, imagine that being your hobby. Like, sometimes I get up on stage, tell jokes and people laugh. Like, it is.
I know. Like, yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't know if I'd be able to do it as a hobby, though. Because it's tough. And I also don't want to glorify stand-up because I do think there's so much ego in stand-up comedy. And sometimes the way comics talk, you'd swear we were fucking saving lives. Do you know what I mean?
Well, like, we are, but...
We're resuscitating the cell.
People messaging me like, can I just say, like, I was having a real tough time and, you know, saw that gig or that podcast really helped me, and I message back and say, yes, I expected this. That's why I do it.
Saving lives, babes. We're just saving lives up here with a mic and a blue wash.
We're
just
key workers. Saving lives. We're key workers. I know what you mean.
Like, sometimes when I see, this is probably me now, but like, I'm on like all the date naps, mostly for, well, I say fun. They can get a bit annoying after a while. But when I see like a guy who's got one of his photos of him like doing stand up, immediately I'm like, but that's obviously because I'm in the industry and I know, you know what I mean? I'm too involved.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's men looking at me thinking the exact same thing. They're like, I'm not taking that shit on.
Well, but you saying you're on date naps. I already knew that because there's two people in the studio and someone else, when you were doing gigs at Belfast, might've seen you on one of the apps.
Oh yeah, is he there? Put him in front of the camera there.
He's over behind the camera and he's shaking.
Put him in front of the camera here so I can swipe left on him in person.
He's shaking his head, but yeah, I already knew that. That's such an interesting thing of like being well known and being on dating apps, because conceivably if you're in Belfast or you're in Dublin or you're in London, these guys will have seen you, like a portion of them will have seen you on a podcast, on TV, on a chat show or whatever. So are you comfortable with someone already knowing you and, oh yeah, I've been at a gig? Or is that easier to start a conversation?
It is weird. And to be honest, I'm relatively new to it as well, because this kind of new acceleration or whatever in my career, that's only really a new thing. So this time last year, no lad on an app would know who I was. But now, yeah, it does happen. I mean, sometimes it happens where lads will DM me and be like, I just want you to know someone's using your photos on Tinder. Like, I've reported.
I've got your account deleted. You're like, fucking don't.
Yeah. I've reported the account. And I'm like, oh, thank God. Because I'm too embarrassed to say, that thirsty bitch, that's me. But it is weirder now. You do have to be more, you have to be kind of more careful and more protective of yourself, because you don't know. And also I'm embarrassed, like I wouldn't be saying anything on, you don't know who they'd be screen grabbing chats and all. You just don't know.
Exactly.
So I mean that's why no one wants me on apps, because they're trying to have a chat with me and I'm just like, yes, no, I won't tell them anything.
Yeah. I had a guy, or I don't know who it was, but I was impersonated on both Tinder and Grindr. And the only thing I wanted to know is, how were they getting on? Like, how was it going? You know, feed me back the results. Like, was there action on the page? That's all I wanted to know.
Who am I sexting today? I'm absolutely thrilled.
But the guy...
It'd be so embarrassing, though, if someone used your photos as a catfish and couldn't get any matches. You'd be
Well, that's it. The guy who used it for, or whoever used it for Grindr, it was, like, not a great picture, and I wanted to get in touch with them just to be like, if you're going to do this, let me pre-approve these pictures, because there's better stuff out there.
Yeah, you're like, this needs a lot of Paris filtering.
Yeah, yeah.
A ring light needs to be put on these things. I was laughing because we were talking about on the pod the other day, kind of the biggest lies men and women have told to kind of get out of like cheating and all this stuff. And one of them, I was laughing. She's like, my boyfriend, he was on a dating app and one of the girls saw him and I said it to him and he said someone was using his photos. He's like, you're a 24-year-old civil servant. You're a 3 out of 10. who would be using your photos as a catfish someone? Get a grip. But one of the funniest was this girl found a makeup brush in her boyfriend's glove compartment. And straight away, this is what I'm so in awe of this creativity. He said that his car had been broken into at the weekend and they'd broken the glass and the guards had used it as to dust for fingerprints.
I didn't know Gardaí had a brand collab with Maybelline.
Yeah. A Sosumi makeup brush, like a pink handle on it and all. Like glitter in the little dust bit.
I saw them checking for cars with a Vidal Sassoon. But
it's so funny.
I mean, the problem I have is I'm not like, I know for a fact if my wife found like a makeup brush in my glove compartment, her first thought wouldn't be, whose is this? It would be, she'd be like, he's got to do what he's got to do. You know what I mean? She'd be like, he's got to do in his face what he needs. Her first thought would be, this is normal that he has this.
She'd be like, this is good.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be like, we can share now.
I might be able to look him in the eyes during sex now because I was really tiring of that face. Yeah, a bit of contouring that wouldn't do you any harm, Shane. Now. Yeah. I'll say it myself.
Yeah.
Make those cheekbones pop.
Yeah. I want to ask you, but you mentioned the podcast. You do a podcast that is absolutely like blown up with Vogue Williams, who I have met once and had what I would describe as a fairly just embarrassing encounter. Would you like to hear about it?
Obviously.
Okay. You know when you get asked to do something and you know that you weren't the first pick to do it?
Oh yeah, 100%.
So.
Like, hey, I'd love to have you on. Would you mind being my special guest in 3 minutes? Sure.
I got a PR agency message me and said, we would like you to do this Coca-Cola campaign. And I think it was around Christmas, and it was like, you know, like the safe driver kind of thing. Designated driver.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what it is. Not safe driver. that's probably why I wasn't the first pick. But they said, look, we're going to do like an All-Ireland type thing. We've got Vogue Williams. This is about 8 years ago. Okay, so I was not even that well known at home here. Never mind in Dublin. So they're like, listen, get the enterprise down, get the train down to Dublin.
For an acting thing, or how do they even come across?
It's a press launch. I was doing some online sketches, videos.
Brand, yeah, gotcha, okay.
Done a little bit of like local TV stuff, very local TV stuff. So they send me a message. Now, because I've been like, we're talking about, you know, people not knowing how long you've done stand-up. This is why I don't like to think about how long I've been doing stand-up. And when people are like, oh, you just started overnight, it suits me. I've been doing stand-up for 15 years.
Yeah.
For 15 years. So
you
this
look
is
really, like, what age did you start? You look quite, what age are you?
I started at 18 and I'm now 57. Which is, no, I'm 33.
Did you really start at 18?
Yeah, started at 18.
Like, what do you talk about at 18? What experience have you had?
And here's the thing,
I wouldn't know what to say.
You were talking about show pony, use that term. I was not like that at all. Maybe amongst my mates, but I wasn't like, you know, you said you maybe didn't do acting when you were younger because of what the family would think or that kind of thing. My family would have supported me in anything like that, but I was just worried in general about what my mates would say. And I pushed the acting bone kind of performing thing kind of down. But when I was 18, I was so bad at stand-up because, like you said, I had no life experience, really. And I was not a natural performer. So a couple of those things together took me a long time to get like semi good at stand-up.
Yeah.
But this is maybe like 7 years ago this thing happened. So PR company get in touch. Coca-Cola want you to, you know, be a brand ambassador. That was the term. Now, I had never been referred to as an ambassador before. So I was like, whatever, I don't care about a fee, whatever, I'm getting a free train ticket. A free train ticket to Dublin? Well, not free. I had to pay for it, keep the receipt, couple of months or shooting that back into my account. I'm loving it. So I go down, and Vogue Williams at that time already had like a high profile. This is going back, but at that time she was still like really well known, obviously, especially down to Dublin, down south, doing loads of TV stuff. Like, she's a star. And I didn't question it until I was on the train, and then I was thinking, I was like, God, she's a celebrity. She's really well known. And I was like, I wonder why I am being asked to do this. Now, at that point, I also started to be very aware of like what I was wearing and stuff. So as soon as they asked me to be a brand ambassador, and I'm a very plain dresser, I thought, the brand ambassador's going to need a jazzy jacket. Because when you're the brand ambassador, you can't wear I'm wearing a quarter zip jeans and trainers. You gotta pump it up a bit. Yeah. So I bought a leather jacket. And I am not a leather. Some guys can carry off a leather jacket, and you go, he must own a motorbike. Very few.
Shame. Yeah.
And I am not one. I got this horrible leather jacket.
Was it like a suit jacket or like a kind of a biker jacket?
A little biker jacket.
That's so cute.
I look like if I was in a bike gang, we'd all be on Vespas. You know, you know what I mean? Like I looked like I was part of a really nice biker gang.
You were doing Meals on Wheels, that kind of biker gang, delivering food to people.
So I go down, and Vogue Williams is there, and all these PR people. And even now, like, I'm not I know people think it's cool to say, like, I'm not really into that. I'm not really comfortable with that thing. I genuinely, I'm not, I don't know where to stand. I don't know who to speak to. I don't know what to do. And I'd never done anything like this. So it was winter kind of time. And I go down and I meet everyone. And Vogue was really nice. She did a great job of pretending to know who I was. You know one of those? She's like, it's yourself.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, and who am I? You know?
She
wouldn't have known, but she was lovely. And everybody working on it was so nice. And they said, and no one knew who I was, right? So they said, we're going to go outside and it's a photo call. It's Vogue, this guy, I was like, Shane, and the mayor of Dublin or something. And it was snowing. No, it wasn't snowing, but it was for a Christmas campaign. So they gave us fake snowballs and we had to pretend to like throw it at the camera. And I don't know if Vogue had trained in that specifically, but she was so good at acting like this is a real snowball and I'm going to throw it. And I'm in my leather jacket and I do this awkward pose and I'm like going red in the photos because I'm not comfortable with any of this. And the guys go, here's the video we're going to make for this. Vogue is going to drive around Dublin, being like the designated driver. People are going to get in. She's going to have a conversation with them and she's killing it. There's some like celebrities getting in. She's talking to them. She's talking to random members of the public who have obviously been pre-picked. They go, Shane, you're going to get in the car with Dublin, with Vogue, and you're going to drive around Dublin. And I get in the car and we're just driving. And she's like chatting to me. I'm chatting. And the producer who's in the back seat goes, tell Vogue some of your jokes.
Oh!
And I'm like, I'm like, I don't think I'll be able to do that. Like, I'm not going to just do stand-up
in
the car. And the guy goes, well, just start telling her anything that's funny. And when someone says that, the last thing you think of is anything that's funny. And you know when, like, something happens to you as a stand-up and you go, I will have a bit about this eventually. You're in a scenario and you go, this will be a bit. The day before I was the Coke brand ambassador, I had had a colonoscopy. 100% true. First time ever.
Okay.
And while I'm doing it, I'm like, this is terrible, but at least I'll have a bit of stand-up about it. So the guy goes, just tell her something that's funny. I was like, I know what's funny. I'll tell her about when I got a colonoscopy. But it wasn't a bit. There was nothing funny about it. I was just like, yeah, I just had a colonoscopy there. And Vogue was waiting on a punchline. She was like, oh, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I'm really concerned about my health. And then we just drove in silence for so long and she was like, God help her, like she was trying her best to get something going and she was like, so that must have been pretty funny. I was like, it was traumatizing. I was like, I think I'll get knocked out again if I ever have to do it, but who knows. I was like, maybe I won't have to do it again, maybe I'll die. And I just remember, like,
just drive me to a hospice. let me out.
Here's how I know it didn't go well. We were in the car for 4 minutes. And there was like an hour set aside for that. And the producer from the back seat went to me, we got it. You know, he's just like, let's wrap it up. He's like, you killed it. We got it. And they made the video and they made my bit like so quick. And I've not been a brand. I'm available for brand ambassadorships for soft drinks company now because Coke lost me.
The relationship is over. Yeah. But it's those situations are very difficult. It's like,
oh man,
that should have, they, in fairness, I don't know who the agency was, but that should have been pre-planned with you. We're going to talk about this, not just go on in there and be gas. It's not a clear brief.
But then other comedians, a lot of comedians would be okay with that. I'm not, but they, you know, there's people who are just always kind of like on and they could, and they're maybe more one-liner type comedians. So they could do that.
There's nothing worse than seeing the look of disappointment in a director's face when you're just not delivering.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I recorded something recently and I'd written like one-liner little gags for it, and it was for a brand. And we were doing the record and I was just doing stone cold silence to the point where, and the lights were all off. I couldn't see anyone to the point where I actually stopped it and I went, guys, I just feel like I'm dying in my head up here. They're like, No. It's good. I was like, could everyone just get out? I need to cry in the corner for a while. This is just heartbreaking.
Honesty's the best with that. Like, I think it's great to have some really good friends in comedy who, when you do a bad gig, you can all laugh about it.
100%. Take the power out of it. Just laugh.
Like, when you die and you come off, people are like, man, that from here, that sounded good. That sounded good from here.
I just can't. I prefer, I don't actually know what I prefer because I think, honestly, I think if you just let, like, if I saw you die in your hell, I would love to think that I'd be able to go up to you and be like, Jesus, Shane, that was violent. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Do you know what?
Well, actually, maybe you need someone to be like, they just didn't get it. I didn't think they could hear you. Yeah. It was really bad in here.
Yeah.
It was an older crowd. It's a Monday night. They're all sober. Like, all the excuses we give, maybe that is better. I don't know. We're sensitive little cells, really.
Yeah. Anytime I gig with Carl Spain, when I do that walk off, you know, and he walks back on, if he's emceeing, every time he goes, you'll get them again. I love that. I love, no, even if it's gone great or it's gone terribly, yeah. But deprecation's definitely important. The podcast you do with Vogue is huge and I think has such like a big fan base of people who are just so into it. Did that start as you guys talk, like being friends and having conversations that you thought people would like to listen, like this could be a podcast? Because it's so good because people feel like they're, it's two friends and they're your friend too and they're in the room and they're part of this chat.
We just knew we wanted to work together. We just felt like we'd enjoy it. And she already had a podcast with Global, who are the network that we're with in the UK. And a podcast, before lockdown, I hadn't ever considered doing a podcast, I don't think. I was just gigging all the time. I was just like, this is how you build it up. You gig, you gig, you gig. You know, that's what kind of the Tommy Tiernans did. And they had no podcast. You just gig.
Yeah,
and then you get bits of telly here and there. And I had never really considered a podcast. And then obviously during lockdown, I was like a rat up a drain pipe. I just needed to be doing stuff.
You need the
like
outlet.
Projects.
Yeah.
I wanted to make, I put a lot of work in and I felt I was at a slightly, you know, I was at a jumping off point. I didn't know what I was jumping into, but I knew that I was getting a bit of traction in the UK and stuff. So I just didn't want to lose that. So I did a podcast in Ireland with Muireann O'Connell called Let's Solve Nothing for a while. And that did quite well. But I was always going to do something in the UK. Me and Vogue talked about doing this podcast before. And it's not that it's easy to do a podcast, but it is easy to do a podcast, you know, like it's, you do it yourself. It's, you just take a mic, get someone involved. You have a studio, you have an edit. You're not reliant on anyone else. You don't have to rely on Channel 4 or RTE giving you a series. You just do it yourself. You get on with it. You can do it from anywhere. If it works, it's a great way to work. And
so good. Such a good.
It's so good. There's so much freedom in it.
Yeah.
You can say what you want within reason. Our podcast is late today because I need to listen to it because
to give it a check.
There was definitely some dodgy shit in there. Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, we started doing the podcast and it was doing well, but I think it was only when I put tickets on sale that I noticed the jump in what I was selling.
Yeah.
And it just started kind of rolling along then. But like, you know, there's luck to it all. There's timing to it all. You know, it'll lose momentum. I don't know. I think these things kind of have like a 3-4 year shelf life, to be honest. People get sick of it then. Like I podcast that I was obsessed with at the start.
Yeah.
That I don't listen to at all now.
Now, did you say a 3-year shelf life? Because we've been doing this for 2. And we've
TikTok,
just
TikTok.
We just signed a new lease. Hey, TikTok might just be what it is. It might just be a 30-second pod every week.
I don't know. I guess
I know exactly what you mean though. Like there's a time where it's all clicking and it's
exactly. You get one opportunity to be new and fresh. And I guess I'm just trying to be realistic about it that it's great. It's doing great things for me in Vogue at the moment. And actually, do you know what? If it stopped tomorrow, which it won't, but it's done a lot for us already from 1,000%, my profile perspective in the UK and people getting to know Vogue and seeing that she's, you know, actually real sound and funny. That's
such a great thing about doing a podcast with people that aren't stand-ups but are funny. For example, it's so genuinely rewarding. Like so we have mainly stand-ups on the podcast. Sometimes we'll have a musician or someone from the world of sport, and it's so great when you have someone on who's maybe a boxer, maybe a local boxer that people only know for sport. They've never heard them speak. They don't know a lot about them, and you have a very natural conversation, and you have a laugh with them, and you see the feedback that they're getting, where people are like, I didn't know this about this guy. He's so funny. And
Totally.
That kind of thing to humanize kind of people that don't have that side of them is great.
And I don't think, I shouldn't say sound and funny because she'll kill me. Obviously, people need to be sound, but with Vogue and anyone who is she is a presenter, I guess, primarily, right? She's loads of strings to her bow. But when you're a presenter, we're very lucky as comedians. We get to just be ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's why when people don't like us, they absolutely despise us because our personality is very much out there.
Yeah.
And I think if people don't like you, they resent you making money off that. So there's pros and cons to being able to be as open about ourselves as we are. But then with Vogue, she would have always had to present this quite polished version of herself. Because she does a lot of work with brands. She does a lot of work on telly, presenting shows. So you kind of have to be a bit of a vessel at times for other people's ideas and other people's visions for a show. So this is an opportunity for people to get to know what she's actually like.
Yep.
And she's
absolutely
fucking gas.
Yep.
And we've got a great chemistry. And also what the fun part is, it's like the upstairs, downstairs thing, Vogue with her stuffed lobster and her, rich aristocratic husband and me living in this shared house with five women and clapping with mushrooms growing behind my toilet. There's crack to be had there because we lead such different lives. She's got kids. Yeah. I've got no kids. She's married. I'm single. So we bring different things, different lifestyles, I guess.
Yeah. Let me ask you about up here, about the fact that, you've done the Limelight shows, you're going to do SSC. When are you doing SSC?
I think it's the 14th of October.
I think before I did SSE, I had a feeling about it where I thought I want to give it a go, but I think I'm not expecting a lot from a audience point of view purely because it's such a big space. Like I'm used to going there to see concerts, to see and I've seen an ice hockey game there before. So in my head,
weird,
it's this big open space. So I thought it's going to be really hard to have that like intimacy with a crowd, and I'd never done a gig with screens before. So am I just going to be this like dot on stage? I was blown away by actually how intimate it is and the way they set that up for a stand-up performance. Everyone felt really close despite it being thousands of people in an arena. So I think you'll really enjoy that. It's really good.
Certain rooms, I think, get away with it. Like I'm doing the Palladium in May. Now, it's not the size of an arena. I think it's 2,200 or something. But I went to a show there just to see what it was like. And like that, because of the setup, because it's kind of tiered seats and balconies and stuff, it actually, you do feel involved. You do feel engaged. I find if there's a tiered seating system, it's you can rely on it being a good show. Or you can rely on them feeling like they're involved and you can feel that they're involved. I think the hardest rooms to do, have you ever done like a hotel function room?
I haven't done that many, mainly for corporates. And that definitely doesn't help the fact that the room is like that. But
they're the toughest, I feel. Even if they're small, even if they're small rooms, I feel they're tough because the roof is so high.
Yeah.
And they're just in a straight line. No energy in those rooms. And they're the toughest gigs. Whereas I did the Three Arena for a charity gig. John Bishop put on a charity gig for Sean Cox, that Liverpool fan who was beaten up. And you could feel it. Like there was proper energy in the room. It was fantastic. And I was really surprised at that actually. Well, but the SSC Arena is bigger, I think. I don't know what it is. What is it?
It's about 3,200 for the stand-up setup.
Yeah. Did you have a set?
What do you mean, on stage?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Like, we were saying, like, I should do this stuff, but it's the last thing I think of. It's the last thing I think of. And then I'm like, I should have had, like, something. But
your name, did you have anything on behind you or anything?
Nope.
Shane!
I know, that's what I should have said. I know. I should. You know what? I'm doing a run in Belfast, in the same venue, in the Opera House later this year. And I promise you, I'll start thinking of something.
Yeah.
And I'll get it because it's going to be a big deal for me. So I want to have something nice.
Defo. You could even get just a projector, like to, you know, to project your name onto the back wall. It doesn't need to be like a physical thing. Yeah. But you need to, I think do it.
Okay. I will. Yeah.
Get a little confetti, a confetti going for the end, you know, something.
I always like, sometimes I think about the thing for the end and then I think about that more than the show. So that's dangerous for me.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I'd be like, shit, I've no jokes for the end. Fuck it, get out the confetti cannon. Yeah.
start shooting subways out of the cannon. Glitter. Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, I think you'll have a load of fun doing that. Did you do many gigs up here when you were starting out? Like, would you have come up and done any of the clubs here?
Yeah. I did the Empire a load of times. Well, I say a load of times, maybe like 8 times kind of thing.
Okay.
And then I did my own... I did the Mac.
Yeah.
I did the Mac twice with my own little show. And then of course, lockdown happened. So now, obviously, I did the Limelights and the SSEs.
Sorry, on Vicar Street, we're talking about intimate venues. Vicar Street, I played once. I did support for Jarlath Regan a few years ago. Just because I wanted to play. Like, I saw he announced it. I was like, please let me do a set before. I always want to play. I've been to see a load of gigs there. Brain and what they do there is it's like a giant living room. It's like,
yeah,
it's like being in a nice living room and watching a perform, and everything's the stage is at the right height, the lights are so good, the balcony like doesn't like dominate the room. It is like a huge goal of mine is down the line to do a show in Vicar Street. Like that's what I would love to. That's what
the
I would love to.
The setup is, it does. The setup, it's a great room. It is a great room. Yeah. The setup is fantastic in there. I wouldn't have known why. Sometimes I can't tell why some rooms just work better than others.
Yeah,
Vicar Street works.
Yeah. Let me ask you a final question. Like what are some of like your ambitions? Like you've packed so much into having done stand-up for like a relatively short space of time since 2017, but what would be the goal for you? Like, are you like, you want to do like sitcom type stuff or?
I don't know, to be honest. Like, I'm after signing a book deal. So I'm that's something that I have to do now, legally.
Yeah, well, that's always the best way to so have to do something.
Maybe that should be the goal. I think it feels like there's like a sitcom would be the natural next step, but also then, like, I have had a couple of things optioned and there's been stuff floating around, but I find writing scripts very hard. I find writing other characters very difficult. I think it's when you're a comic, there's this pressure to be able to do everything. Like,
yeah.
You have to be the expectation on fire on stage, on fire in brainstorming sessions, on fire on telly, on fire on panel shows,
social
on fire
media.
On sitcoms, social media, banging out content. Yeah, I actually think my first interest is stand-up, just stand-up. So, and I love touring. I love the process. I don't really like writing shows. You know yourself, it's kind of like getting blood from a stone, but I like having written a show. I kind of enjoy Edinburgh. It's some sort of, you know, my masochist, but...
I have an idea of how... So for anyone who doesn't know the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, you're there for a month doing like a residency. If it could be like the way it should be in my head, I would love to do it. For example, nice apartment, nice facilities there, little gym in the apartment block, swimming pool, maybe.
Yeah.
Really nice. No hills. Let's get rid of the hills in Edinburgh. Let's flatten it. I don't like to go uphill and then uphill again. I don't like that it's all on different levels. That's rude.
Iron Edinburgh. Let's just iron it. Just iron the whole place.
Take a year off the fringe. Get town planning involved. Make it all level. Don't have so much distance between the gigs. I don't like that. The weather is always shit. And obviously rent is so high for the month. And I don't always want to work on Monday. So I would like to do my own festival.
Yeah.
Where I have an amazing apartment and I maybe do 3 shows a week and I don't have to pay any money for anything.
That would be the dream.
Let me tell you this, right, finally, right? I a few years ago, I was like, the Fringe is just, it's too big of a like burden, and at this point like I think we were expecting our kid and I just got married and I was like, I don't think I want us all to have to go to Edinburgh for a month, so what I did, and I don't want to be away for a month, so I got in touch with one of the main venues and said, listen, your boy wants to roll in for two shows in one night. That's what I want to do. 70 cap. We'll sell out the two shows. It was a Friday or a Saturday. And then I'm going to come. I'm going to stay for one night. And because I'll not be spending a lot of money, I'm going to book a 5-star hotel. I'm going to have a nice dinner. I'm going to meet up with friends who are doing the Fringe. Look at how beaten down and weathered they are. Love that. And then breeze on home. So I booked the venue. It was Assembly Rooms, right? Booked the venue. Two shows. One sold out before I went over. The other one sold out on the day. I was like, I've completed Edinburgh. I check into my hotel. It's amazing. I have a lovely meal. I took a mate who's a comedian out. I said, listen, you're spending loads of money. I said, I'm going to clean up here. So I'll take you out. Went out for a fancy dinner. I do the shows. Lovely crowds. We go out for a pint or two after. And then I was like, right, that's me done with the Fringe, done with Edinburgh. But 2 weeks later, I get an email. The venue go, we need to chat about this settlement, this £900. And I said, I'll invoice for that or whatever. And part of my head, I was like, 900, like that was two shows. I was doing the maths. It was like, the hotel was about 300. Would have liked to have made a bit more. I sent them an invoice. They phoned me and were like, well, what is this? I was like, it's my invoice for £900. I owed them £900.
No.
For the two, because of what the venue hire was. I was in the brochure and something else.
Sorry.
Joanne, I was living like a Versailles prince. I was like I was dishing out money to people in Edinburgh. I was buying a homeless guy a suit. I was like, it's on me. It's on me, you know?
That's an amazing story.
I got fucked so hard.
That is an amazing Edinburgh story. That's up there with, did you hear the story? Now, whether this is true or not, I actually don't care. I've decided it is. That this lad, I think it was an Irish comic, that he did his, there was one guy at a show, the lights were off. He was like, I'm going to do the show anyway. Did his whole hour, tried to speak to your man. He wouldn't reply. He's like, all right, Grant, that's no crowd work. He just kind of rattled through the show. The lights came up. It was a jacket. It was just a jacket on a chair.
Yeah,
apparently the tech knew and he just was like, oh fuck it, I'm just gonna let it run.
I know that's true, and the reason I know it's true is it was me. No, it wasn't. I love that. There's something about that though that some people get angry at that if they were that comic. I would love it if that happened.
Of course,
to me.
It's so funny. They're like, you know, they're like your little war stories, you know, and they make the wins sweeter because we've all been through the shit. Like,
50 minutes in, he must have been like, the closer's going to get him. The closer's fire. I'm going to get him with a closer.
Oh, I'll win him over eventually.
I did a show at the Fringe. The audience, it was a Saturday night, was two American guys and my dad, and they'd gone to the wrong show. And I said, I'll give you your money back and I'll take you out for a pint. And they said, do the show. And they were enjoying it, two of them. And halfway through the show, my dad starts texting. And I was like, you're 33% of the crowd. And my dad said, oh, I'm just getting the lads some photos so that they know what you're saying isn't a lie. So I was telling a story about being a kid and having big ears and buck teeth. And my dad was like, don't worry about it. And he's like, look, lads. And he starts showing them like pictures of me as a kid. He's like, he really was a freak. So I like those small intimate Edinburgh shows.
Of course, they're great.
We'll put a link to the SSE show in the description of this podcast. But I think you'll rock it. I think you'll really enjoy it. And
I hope so.
Yeah, everything you're doing is great at the minute. Like, congratulations on everything that's happening. And we've never met before, but I think we haven't met.
I'm surprised we haven't met, actually.
I actually think you're saying about it's hard to write and sitcom type stuff. I think how you got into stand-up and that story, I think that is a story in itself and that would make for something great. So
yeah, maybe. We'll see. It's just...
I'm going to write it and say it happened to me.
I think sometimes it's, you know, it's like I just really like stand-up. So you're like, is that not enough?
Yeah.
Not for me for the moment anyway.
I know. Well, you're killing it. So congratulations on everything that's happening. And
thanks, Shane.
I'll come to the Belfast show. And I'm going to get a sign for
my
show.
Please do.
I'm going to get a sign for my show. And here's what I'm going to do. After we wrap up, I'm going to send you a picture of me throwing the snowball in the leather jacket.
I can't wait to shower.
It's better than you can imagine it is.
She's such a pro.
Yeah. She's brilliant. She's killing it. And I'm just in this leather jacket. Joanne, thanks so much for doing the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. Good luck with all the shows. Thank you very much. Enjoy your training and enjoy Versailles.